science reverses the false testimony of the physical senses, and by this reversal, mortals arrive at the fundamental facts of being. Then the question inevitably arises, is a man sick if the material senses indicate that he is in good health? No, for matter can make no conditions for man. And is he well if the senses say he is sick? Yes, he is well in science, in which health is normal and disease is abnormal. Health is not a condition of matter, but of mind, nor can the material senses bear reliable testimony on the subject of health. The science of mind healing shows it to be impossible for aught but mind to testify truly or to exhibit the real status of man. Therefore, the divine principle of science, reversing the testimony of the physical senses, reveals man as harmoniously existent in truth, which is the only basis of health. And thus science denies all disease, heals the sick, overthrows false evidence, and refutes materialistic logic. Any conclusion, pro or con, deduced from supposed sensation in matter or from matter's supposed consciousness of health or disease, instead of reversing the testimony of the physical senses, confirms that testimony as legitimate and so leads to disease. When Columbus gave freer breath to the globe, ignorance and superstition chained the limbs of the brave old navigator, and disgrace and starvation stared him in the face. But sterner still would have been his fate if his discovery had undermined the favorite inclinations of a sensuous philosophy. Copernicus mapped out the stellar system, and before he spake, astrography was chaotic, and the heavenly fields were incorrectly explored. The Chaldean wise men read in the stars the fate of empires and the fortunes of men. Though no higher revelation than the horoscope was to them displayed upon the Empyrean, earth and heaven were bright, and bird and blossom were glad in God's perennial and happy sunshine, golden with truth. So we have goodness and beauty to gladden the heart, but man, left to the hypotheses of material sense unexplained by science, is as the wandering comet or the desolate star, a weary searcher for a viewless home. The earth's diurnal rotation is invisible to the physical eye, and the sun seems to move from east to west instead of the earth from west to east. Until rebuked by clearer views of the everlasting facts, this false testimony of the eye deluded the judgment and induced false conclusions. Science shows appearances often to be erroneous and corrects these errors by the simple rule that the greater controls the lesser. The sun is the central stillness so far as our solar system is concerned, and the earth revolves about the sun once a year, besides turning daily on its own axis. As thus indicated, astronomical order imitates the action of divine principle, and the universe, the reflection of God, is thus brought nearer the spiritual fact, and is allied to divine science as displayed in the everlasting government of the universe. The evidence of the physical senses often reverses the real science of being, and so creates a reign of discord, assigning seeming power to sin, sickness, and death. But the great facts of life, rightly understood, defeat this triad of errors, contradict their false witnesses, and reveal the kingdom of heaven, the actual reign of harmony on earth. The material senses reversal of the science of soul was practically exposed 1900 years ago by the demonstrations of Jesus. Yet these so-called senses still make mortal mind tributary to mortal body and ordain certain sections of matter, such as brain and nerves, as the seats of pain and pleasure, from which matter reports to this so-called mind a status of happiness or misery. The optical focus is another proof of the illusion of material sense. On the eye's retina, sky and treetops apparently join hands, clouds and ocean meet and mingle. The barometer, that little prophet of storm and sunshine, denying the testimony of the senses, points to fair weather in the midst of murky clouds and drenching rain. Experience is full of instances of similar illusions, which every thinker can recall for himself. To material sense, the severance of the jugular vein takes away life, but to spiritual sense and in science, life goes on unchanged and being is eternal. Temporal life is a false sense of existence. Our theorists make the same mistake regarding soul and body that Ptolemy made regarding the solar system. They insist that soul is in body and mind therefore tributary to matter. Astronomical science has destroyed the false theory as to the relations of the celestial bodies, and Christian science will surely destroy the greater error as to our terrestrial bodies. The true idea and principle of man will then appear. The Ptolemaic blunder could not affect the harmony of being, as does the error relating to soul and body, which reverses the order of science and assigns to matter the power and prerogative of spirit, so that man becomes the most absolutely weak and inharmonious creature in the universe. The verity of mind shows conclusively how it is that matter seems to be, but is not. Divine science, rising above physical theories, excludes matter, resolves things into thoughts, and replaces the objects of material sense with spiritual ideas. The term Christian science was introduced by the author to designate the scientific system of divine healing. The revelation consists of two parts. 1. The discovery of this divine science of mind healing through a spiritual sense of the scriptures and through the teachings of the Comforter as promised by the Master. 2. The proof by present demonstration that the so-called miracles of Jesus did not specially belong to a dispensation now ended, but that they illustrated an ever-operative divine principle. The operation of this principle indicates the eternality of the scientific order and continuity of being. Christian science differs from material science, but not on that account is it less scientific. On the contrary, Christian science is preeminently scientific, being based on truth, the principle of all science. Physical science, so-called, is human knowledge, a law of mortal mind, a blind belief, a Samson shorn of his strength. When this human belief lacks organizations to support it, its foundations are gone. Having neither moral might, spiritual basis, nor holy principle of its own, this belief mistakes effect for cause and seeks to find life and intelligence in matter, thus limiting life and holding fast to discord and death. In a word, human belief is a blind conclusion from material reasoning. This is a mortal, finite sense of things which immortal spirit silences forever. The universe, like man, is to be interpreted by science from its divine principle, God, and then it can be understood. But when explained on the basis of physical sense and represented as subject to growth, maturity, and decay, the universe, like man, is and must continue to be an enigma. Adhesion, cohesion, and attraction are properties of mind. They belong to divine principle and support the equipoise of that thought force which launched the earth in its orbit and said to the proud wave, "Thus far and no farther." Spirit is the life, substance, and continuity of all things. We tread on forces, withdraw them, and creation must collapse. Human knowledge calls them forces of matter, but divine science declares that they belong wholly to divine mind, are inherent in this mind, and so restores them to their rightful home and classification. The elements and functions of the physical body and of the physical world will change as mortal mind changes its beliefs. What is now considered the best condition for organic and functional health in the human body may no longer be found indispensable to health. Moral conditions will be found always harmonious and health-giving. Neither organic inaction nor overaction is beyond God's control, and man will be found normal and natural to changed mortal thought, and therefore more harmonious in his manifestations than he was in the prior states which human belief created and sanctioned. As human thought changes from one stage to another, of conscious pain and painlessness, sorrow and joy, from fear to hope, and from faith to understanding, the visible manifestation will at last be man governed by soul, not by material sense. Reflecting God's government, man is self-governed. When subordinate to the divine spirit, man cannot be controlled by sin or death, thus proving our material theories about laws of health to be valueless. The seasons will come and go with changes of time and tide, cold and heat, latitude and longitude. The agriculturist will find that these changes cannot affect his crops. As a vesture shalt thou change them, and they shall be changed. The mariner will have dominion over the atmosphere and the great deep, over the fish of the sea and the fowls of the air. The astronomer will no longer look up to the stars. He will look out from them upon the universe, and the florist will find his flower before its seed. Thus matter will finally be proved nothing more than a mortal belief, wholly inadequate to affect a man through its supposed organic action or supposed existence. Error will be no longer used in stating truth. The problem of nothingness, or dust to dust, will be solved, and mortal mind will be without form and void, for mortality will cease when man beholds himself God's reflection, even as man sees his reflection in a glass. All science is divine. Human thought never projected the least portion of true being. Human belief has sought and interpreted in its own way the echo of spirit, and so seems to have reversed it and repeated it materially. But the human mind never produced a real tone nor sent forth a positive sound. The point at issue between Christian science on the one hand and popular theology on the other is this. Shall science explain cause and effect as being both natural and spiritual? Or shall all that is beyond the cognizance of the material senses be called supernatural and be left to the mercy of speculative hypotheses? I have set forth Christian science and its application to the treatment of disease just as I have discovered them. I have demonstrated through mind the effects of truth on the health, longevity, and morals of men, and I have found nothing in ancient or in modern systems on which to found my own, except the teachings and demonstrations of our great Master and the lives of prophets and apostles. The Bible has been my only authority. I have had no other guide in the straight and narrow way of truth. If Christendom resists the author's application of the word science to Christianity, or questions her use of the word science, she will not therefore lose faith in Christianity, nor will Christianity lose its hold upon her. If God, the all in all, be the creator of the spiritual universe, including man, then everything entitled to a classification as truth or science must be comprised in a knowledge or understanding of God, for there can be nothing beyond illimitable divinity. The terms divine science, spiritual science, Christ science or Christian science, or science alone, she employs interchangeably according to the requirements of the context. These synonymous terms stand for everything relating to God, the infinite, supreme, eternal mind. It may be said, however, that the term Christian science relates especially to science as applied to humanity. Christian science reveals God, not as the author of sin, sickness, and death, but as divine principle, supreme being, mind, exempt from all evil. It teaches that matter is the falsity, not the fact of existence, that nerves, brain, stomach, lungs, and so forth have as matter no intelligence, life, nor sensation. There is no physical science, inasmuch as all truth proceeds from the divine mind. Therefore, truth is not human, and is not a law of matter, for matter is not a lawgiver. Science is an emanation of divine mind, and is alone able to interpret God aright. It has a spiritual and not a material origin. It is a divine utterance, the comforter which leadeth into all truth. Christian science eschews what is called natural science, insofar as this is built on the false hypothesis that matter is its own lawgiver, that law is founded on material conditions, and that these are final and overrule the might of divine mind. Good is natural and primitive. It is not miraculous to itself. The term science properly understood, refers only to the laws of God and to his government of the universe, inclusive of man. From this, it follows that businessmen and culture scholars have found that Christian Science enhances their endurance and mental powers, enlarges their perception of character, gives them acuteness and comprehensiveness, and an ability to exceed their ordinary capacity. The human mind, imbued with this spiritual understanding, becomes more elastic, is capable of greater endurance, escapes somewhat from itself, and requires less repose. And knowledge of the science of being develops the latent abilities and possibilities of man. It extends the atmosphere of thought, giving mortals access to broader and higher realms. It raises the thinker into his native air of insight and perspicacity. An order becomes beneficent and agreeable only in proportion to its escape into the surrounding atmosphere. So it is with our knowledge of truth. If one would not quarrel with his fellow man for waking him from a cataleptic nightmare, he should not resist truth, which banishes, yea, forever destroys with the higher testimony of spirit, the so-called evidence of matter. Science relates to mind, not matter. It rests on fixed principle and not upon the judgment of false sensation. The addition of two sums in mathematics must always bring the same result. So is it with logic. If both the major and the minor propositions of a syllogism are correct, the conclusion, if properly drawn, cannot be false. So in Christian Science there are no discords nor contradictions, because its logic is as harmonious as the reasoning of an accurately stated syllogism or of a properly computed sum in arithmetic. Truth is ever truthful and can tolerate no error in premise or conclusion. If you wish to know the spiritual fact, you can discover it by reversing the material fable, be the fable pro or con, be it in accord with your preconceptions or utterly contrary to them. Pantheism may be defined as a belief in the intelligence of matter, a belief which science overthrows. In those days, there will be great tribulation such as was not since the beginning of the world, and earth will echo the cry, "Art thou truth, come hither, to torment us before the time?" Animal magnetism, hypnotism, spiritualism, theosophy, agnosticism, pantheism, and infidelity are antagonistic to true being and fatal to its demonstration, and so are some other systems. We must abandon pharmaceutics and take up ontology, the science of real being. We must look deep into realism instead of accepting only the outward sense of things. Can we gather peaches from a pine tree, or learn from discord the concord of being? Yet quite as rational are some of the leading illusions along the path which science must tread in its reformatory mission among mortals. The very name illusion points to nothingness. The generous liver may object to the author's small estimate of the pleasures of the table. The sinner sees, in the system taught in this book, that the demands of God must be met. The petty intellect is alarmed by constant appeals to mind. The licentious disposition is discouraged over its slight spiritual prospects. When all men are bidden to the feast, the excuses come. One has a farm, another has merchandise, and therefore they cannot accept. It is vain to speak dishonestly of divine science, which destroys all discord, when you can demonstrate the actuality of science. It is unwise to doubt if reality is in perfect harmony with God, divine principle, if science, when understood and demonstrated, will destroy all discord. Since you admit that God is omnipotent, for from this premise it follows that good and its sweet concords have all power. Christian science, properly understood, would disabuse the human mind of material beliefs which war against spiritual facts, and these material beliefs must be denied and cast out to make place for truth. You cannot add to the contents of a vessel already full. Laboring long to shake the adult's faith in matter and to inculcate a grain of faith in God, an inkling of the ability of spirit to make the body harmonious, the author has often remembered our Master's love for little children and understood how truly such as they belong to the heavenly kingdom. If thought is startled at the strong claim of science for the supremacy of God or truth, and doubts the supremacy of good, ought we not contrarywise to be astounded at the vigorous claims of evil and doubt them, and no longer think it natural to love sin and unnatural to forsake it, no longer imagine evil to be ever present and good absent. Truth should not seem so surprising and unnatural as error, and error should not seem so real as truth. Sickness should not seem so real as health. There is no error in science, and our lives must be governed by reality in order to be in harmony with God, the divine principle of all being. When once destroyed by divine science, the false evidence before the corporeal senses disappears. Hence, the opposition of sensuous man to the science of soul and the significance of the scripture, the carnal mind is enmity against God. The central fact of the Bible is the superiority of spiritual over physical power. Theology. Must Christian science come through the Christian churches, as some persons insist? This science has come already after the manner of God's appointing, but the churches seem not ready to receive it, according to the scriptural saying, "He came unto his own, and his own received him not." Jesus once said, "I thank thee, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, that thou hast hid these things from the wise and prudent, and hast revealed them unto babes. Even so, Father, for so it seemed good in thy sight." As aforetime, the Spirit of the Christ, which taketh away the ceremonies and doctrines of men, is not accepted until the hearts of men are made ready for it. The mission of Jesus confirmed prophecy and explained the so-called miracles of olden time as natural demonstrations of the divine power, demonstrations which were not understood. Jesus' works established his claim to the Messiahship. In reply to John's inquiry, "Art thou he that should come?" Jesus returned an affirmative reply, recounting his works instead of referring to his doctrine. Confident that this exhibition of the divine power to heal would fully answer the question. Hence his reply, "Go and show John again those things which ye do hear and see. The blind receive their sight, and the lame walk. The lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear. The dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. And blessed is he, whosoever shall not be offended in me." In other words, he gave his benediction to anyone who should not deny that such effects, coming from divine mind, prove the unity of God, the divine principle which brings out all harmony. The Pharisees of old thrust the spiritual idea and the man who lived it out of their synagogues and retained their materialistic beliefs about God. Jesus' system of healing received no aid nor approval from other sanitary or religious systems, from doctrines of physics or of divinity, and it has not yet been generally accepted. Today, as of yore, unconscious of the reappearing of the spiritual idea, blind belief shuts the door upon it and condemns the cure of the sick and sinning if it is wrought on any but a material and a doctrinal theory. Anticipating this rejection of idealism, of the true idea of God, the salvation from all error, physical and mental, Jesus asked, "When the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on the earth?" Did the doctrines of John the Baptist confer healing power upon him, or endow him with the truest conception of the Christ? This righteous preacher once pointed his disciples to Jesus as the Lamb of God. Yet afterwards, he seriously questioned the signs of the messianic appearing and sent the inquiry to Jesus, "Art thou he that should come?" Was John's faith greater than that of the Samaritan woman who said, "Is not this the Christ?" There was also a certain centurion of whose faith Jesus himself declared, "I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel." In Egypt, it was mind which saved the Israelites from belief in the plagues. In the wilderness, streams flowed from the rock, and manna fell from the sky. The Israelites looked upon the brazen serpent and straightway believed that they were healed of the poisonous stings of vipers. In national prosperity, miracles attended the successes of the Hebrews, but when they departed from the true idea, their demoralization began. Even in captivity, among foreign nations, the divine principle wrought wonders for the people of God in the fiery furnace and in kings' palaces. Judaism was the antithesis of Christianity because Judaism engendered the limited form of a national or tribal religion. It was a finite and material system carried out in special theories concerning God, man, sanitary methods, and a religious cultus. That he made himself equal with God was one of the Jewish accusations against him who planted Christianity on the foundation of spirit, who taught as he was inspired by the Father and would recognize no life, intelligence, nor substance outside of God. The Jewish conception of God as Yahweh, Jehovah, or only a mighty hero and king, has not quite given place to the true knowledge of God. creeds and rituals have not cleansed their hands of rabbinical law. Today the cry of bygone ages is repeated, "Crucify him." At every advancing step, truth is still opposed with sword and spear. The word martyr from the Greek means witness, but those who testified for truth were so often persecuted unto death that at length the word martyr was narrowed in its significance and so has come always to mean one who suffers for his convictions. The new faith in the Christ, truth, so roused the hatred of the opponents of Christianity that the followers of Christ were burned, crucified, and otherwise persecuted. And so it came about that human rights were hallowed by the gallows and the cross. Man-made doctrines are waning. They have not worked strong in times of trouble. Devoid of the Christ power, how can they illustrate the doctrines of Christ or the miracles of grace? Denial of the possibility of Christian healing robs Christianity of the very element which gave it divine force and its astonishing and unequaled success in the first century. The true Logos is demonstrably Christian Science, the natural law of harmony which overcomes discord, not because this science is supernatural or preternatural, nor because it is an infraction of divine law, but because it is the immutable law of God good. Jesus said, "I knew that thou hearest me always," and he raised Lazarus from the dead, stilled the tempest, healed the sick, walked on the water. There is divine authority for believing in the superiority of spiritual power over material resistance. A miracle fulfills God's law, but does not violate that law. This fact at present seems more mysterious than the miracle itself. The psalmist sang, "What ailed thee, O thou sea, that thou fleddest? Thou Jordan, that thou wast driven back? Ye mountains, that ye skipped like rams, and ye little hills like lambs. Tremble thou earth at the presence of the Lord, at the presence of the God of Jacob. The miracle introduces no disorder, but unfolds the primal order, establishing the science of God's unchangeable law. Spiritual evolution alone is worthy of the exercise of divine power. The same power which heals sin heals also sickness. This is the beauty of holiness, that when truth heals the sick, it casts out evils, and when truth casts out the evil called disease, it heals the sick. When Christ cast out the devil of dumbness, it came to pass, when the devil was gone out, the dumb spake." There is today danger of repeating the offense of the Jews by limiting the Holy One of Israel and asking, "Can God furnish a table in the wilderness? What cannot God do?" It has been said, and truly, that Christianity must be science, and science must be Christianity, else one or the other is false and useless. But neither is unimportant or untrue, and they are alike in demonstration. This proves the one to be identical with the other. Christianity, as Jesus taught it, was not a creed, nor a system of ceremonies, nor a special gift from a ritualistic Jehovah, but it was the demonstration of divine love, casting out error and healing the sick, not merely in the name of Christ or truth, but in demonstration of truth, as must be the case in the cycles of divine light.